Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show. Show.
Hey, welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Marable, CEO of Employee Cycle. And you know us, we're your friendly HR analytics dashboard where we bring all your data from all your different HR systems into one real-time, beautiful, and streamlined dashboard so you can view, track, and analyze all your people data in one place. But that's enough about me because I want to tell you about our awesome, awesome guests. So today, we are going to be talking about why HR has to be more than HR. Apparently, you just can't be HR now. You really got to step it up and be more and bring more to the organization. So without further ado, please help me welcome Karen Weeks, VP of People at Order Groove, to the podcast. Woo!
Karen! Hi, everyone!
Welcome to the podcast!
Thank you. I love it. Very excited to be here. Love the energy.
Nice. So thanks so much for being here. And the first question that we always like to know is, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's sort of an interesting story for me. I actually started in theater and was working in Hollywood out in LA as supporting a talent agent. And very quickly, I realized that that life was not for me, both from a lifestyle standpoint. You know, you never, as a stage manager, you never know when you're next gig is going to come and where you're going to have to be. And then from an LA standpoint, some people love it. It was not for me. And so what I was trying to figure out was, what the heck did that all mean for what I was actually going to do with my life? So I talked to a couple of folks, and the things that I realized I enjoyed doing was bringing everybody together for a shared experience. And that was sort of the stage manager part. And then helping people figure out their careers, which was the talent agent part. And that probably meant HR. So I moved back to the East Coast, was just being a temp for a small company and was helping them like close their books at the end of the year, do some filing. And I shared sort of what I was trying to get into. And they said, you know, we don't really have HR here. We don't even know what that really means. If you're willing to kind of help us figure it out, we're willing to help you kind of figure out what HR means for you. And so that was my first HR job. I was an office / HR coordinator. And then 15 plus years later, I've had the chance to do everything from training and development to HR business partner roles to HR ops kind of roles. And my last two gigs have been working with startups to help them grow their culture and their people teams.
Nice. And your VP of people at Order Groove, just quickly for our audience, what type of company is Order Groove?
Sure. So we're a SaaS technology company. We've helped create a category called relationship commerce, sort of within the e-commerce and broader commerce space. We specifically work with retailers and brands to help create relationships with their customers so it's not transactional. So think of Amazon Subscribe and Save, but specifically directly with the retailer. So this is a very baseline example of what we do. There's plenty of other things that we do with organizations, but the example I always like to use is, if you go to PetSmart.com and buy a bag of dog food, it will ask if you want to sign up for our auto ship. And that's our program running on PetSmart's website. We can also do in-store programs. We can do monthly boxes. We can do predictive reordering if you don't want to sign up for a subscription. So there's a lot of different ways that we create frictionless opportunities for retailers to stay very connected to their consumers so that they don't lose them to other companies or to an easier way to buy their product.
Nice. So today we're talking about, what does it really mean for HR to be more than HR? So my question for you is, what does it mean for HR to be more than just HR?
Yeah, I really think for me, it means that it's very easy to say what the literal answer should be. So, you know, I went to grad school and I got my degree and it says this, or I have my SPHR and the answer on the test was this, or this is what I've done at every other company, so let me just rinse and repeat. And while all of that information is incredibly helpful, obviously, to make informed decisions and to think through what the possibilities are, it is so important, in my humble opinion, it is so important that HR practitioners or leaders who are focused on culture and people, that we really think through what is the right answer for this organization. It's very easy to say, oh, I want to do the shiny, cool new HR thing that's happening. Or, well, we're supposed to do performance reviews, so therefore we must do performance reviews. But if those things aren't right for where your organization is at that moment, then you're really missing out on opportunity. And I think that's what gives the older perception of the sort of stodgy HR person in the room. We should really be doing what's right for the organization and helping be a partner in figuring that out.
Interesting. So because we're talking about shiny and cool, and because your title is VP of People, I want to start with that.
Yes. I want to start with that.
So as we're talking about HR transforming from back in the day, from an admin role to probably most HR today are in a tactical role, to now most HR, or at least a lot of HR people aspiring to be a strategic role. This people, operations, people and culture, chief people officer role, is it shiny and cool? Or does it actually have meaning? And is this HR being more than just HR?
It's a great question. I remember when I was talking to the folks here at Order Groove about coming on board, and I knew the COO from our last organization, Yodel, and we talked a lot about the title, because it was the first time they even had a role like this, so it was the opportunity to kind of set what it was going to be. And it's funny, I'm someone who I actually really don't care what the title is. It's more about the quality of work and what the point of the role is. You can call me whatever you want. But I think what it does show is that it is really trying to define the fact that a company is going to be successful if you have someone who is focused on people and culture just as much as you have someone who's focused on product, sales, you know, client services, whatever, technology, all those different pieces. And so I think moving from HR, for, you know, gosh, personnel way back in the day, HR, then it went to like talent and talent management, and then sort of bringing the broader perspective of people. I think, or some companies are using like people and culture and literally bringing the two together. I think it's definitely the trendy thing. I think it's more about what does that actually mean? You can put the words on the paper, but if you're still treating the role like a former HR role or more admin or more fluffy than the substance that an HR person can bring to the table. I think that's an issue, and you can call it whatever you want. But I think if you have a company that's really saying, we want to use this title because people and culture, and making sure that that is front and center and making the right smart decisions to move the business forward through our people and culture, then that title is awesome if that's really reflecting what you want the role to be. So if it's just a shiny role title because that's what everybody's calling it, then it's nice, but it's just going to be on the surface and you're going to get very frustrated because that's not the work you're actually going to be doing.
Got it. So let's break this interview up into three different parts. The first is, why does HR have to be more than HR, and what areas in the business or in the role HR is really not doing? Then let's talk about, once HR is doing those roles and stepping up, what does that look like? And then the last part we'll talk about is, how do you even measure the impact of the difference so that you should know if you should be doing this in the first place? Does that work for you?
Yeah, sounds great.
All right. So the first part, why is this even important in the first place? And what areas do you see HR typically lacking when they're just doing HR and not really doing what's best for the company in this full HR role?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of different things that could be happening there. So one is, I think, like everybody, right? Think about it as a product. You always want to build something that's going to make a difference, but you also want to always build something that's challenging and not from an ego standpoint, but like some notoriety. So like, hey, I really built this really cool thing. And I think HR can sometimes fall into that same pattern of, you know, the Netflix deck or Google does this, or, you know, all these things that are out there that we hear about. And we want to provide that same kind of value to the organizations that we work with. And sure, you know, hopefully, you know, be recognized for that as well. And so I think sometimes that can be distracting. And one thing that I really try to suss out when I first came to Order Groove and I was trying to learn what the current culture was, you know, I was very adamant that it's not the free snacks, it's not the ping pong, it's not that stuff. It's the way, you know, the team is treated. It's the way communication happens. It's the way decisions are made. And that's actually driving the culture. And so I think that, and then through that, then I can figure out what are some great programs that we can do that continue to support that or take that to the next level, especially working for a scaling organization. As we grow as a company, there are some things that are part of our DNA that we want to make sure we continue with, but there's going to be some things that we have to evolve because we're not a team of 20, we're a team of 75 now. And I think that it's really important that if you remember the meat and potatoes of what makes an organization great, that's what's going to help you scale. And that's what's going to help you continue to build that great culture. And if you're trying to shove in cool things that people don't actually need or isn't right for the culture that you have, just like if you build a really cool product that, yeah, might've been really fun to build, but if the consumers never use it, then it was just a cool product that is actually pretty useless. And so I try to think about that in the same way as I think about HR. I had a great example, oh gosh, maybe 5 years ago now, that we were going to roll out manager training. And I was the lucky person to be offered the opportunity to build all the training, figure out what that was going to look like, brand it, sell it, the whole shebang. And I was like, yes, let's do this. And I dove headfirst in, created all this stuff. And as I was starting to roll it out with my HR partners, we were down on the HR team, other things were going on in the organization. And one of my peers said to me very bluntly, this is all great. I don't know how we're going to get any of this done with some of these other things going on. And can we pare it down? Can we do this? Can we do that? And she was 100% right. I mean, it crushed my soul when she said it, but she was 100% right because I had lost sight of what we were actually trying to achieve and what we actually needed to do. And the concept of trying something, use a pilot group, start with one module and then maybe roll out past that or start in one location or any of the things that you would do, with, a focus group for a product or, a trial or a beta or something like that. I needed to take that own advice. And to me, that's one example of, just sort of doing HR for HR's sake is I missed what the company actually needed and what the company was actually ready for. And I would have had much more buy-in and success if I had started small, gotten some champions, and then expanded.
Interesting. So what it sounds like you're saying, and just to clarify for the audience, it's that it's not necessarily the HR leader's job to do things outside of HR in the sense of start doing things in marketing or sales or product or finance, but it's literally not doing HR just for HR's sake and actually doing HR work that you think will make a real impact on the business. Did I get that right?
Absolutely, 100%.
Got it. But in that same vein, and we've talked about this on a couple of previous podcasts, and I think it's so important to reiterate, in order to not just do HR for HR's sake and to be more than just HR, how much of the business should you understand? How much of all the other departments should you really be able to work with and even know their job, maybe sometimes even better than they know their own job, to make sure that you're being a real strategic business partner?
Yeah, I think that it is important to understand the baseline of what the company does in the sense of, how we make money, how that's going, what are we learning from the outside market, what adjustments are we making along the way to in order to make sure that we're really finding our market fit and addressing the customer's needs. I think it's really important to understand how the different organizations or how the different departments work together. Where are some of those pain points? If we aren't hitting numbers or we aren't finding product fit or whatever the thing is, why is that happening and what are we learning from it? Is it the way we're approaching something? Is it the skills and expertise that we have in-house? Do we need to hire additional people with different expertise or backgrounds? Need to think about how those teams are working together? Are they too siloed? And I think that while I don't need to literally understand how our APIs work or what the Python code is behind that, I need to know that when we are building our platform, it is very intensive for a client to currently integrate with us. And that's a 3-month process. And so we have to hire really great technical client solutions people to make that happen. And the reason why I need to know that is, A, as an organization, if we need to think about how we can lessen that burden, I want to be a part of those conversations to help think through that as a VP of this company. But also because that way I can then coach our leadership team or our hiring managers or our individual contributors around what does that then mean for them? Is that we need to be doing more testing? Well, does that mean we need to be hiring people that have more of a testing muscle? Does that mean that we need to rethink the organizational structure to make sure that our technical folks are able to focus on being technical and our other folks are able to be great relationship people with the client that we're working with? It could be a million different things, but the only way that I will be effective in helping coaching the organization and how to then affect that business goal that we have is to understand at least the baseline information of what we do, how we make money, and how the teams work together.
Got it. Are there any other areas that you believe your HR and people ops and people leader colleagues are missing in this area of needing to be more than just HR before we move to the next section?
I think the only thing I'll say is it's not something that we're missing. I actually think it's something that we sometimes overdo. And this is actually something that I've witnessed less because I'm not part of the conversations because I'm usually the HR person in this conversation. But what I've heard from other CEOs and other leaders of HR folks that they've worked with is that the wonderful thing is that HR is now usually at that leadership table, exec table, whatever, you know, different companies call it. But that just like a finance person is bringing a different perspective, I'm bringing a different perspective, the product person is bringing a different perspective. I think sometimes we feel like we have to make sure we have a voice in that room in the sense of I'm going to say something just to say something to make sure people know that I'm supposed to be there. There are some conversations that I'm a part of where I'm doing a lot of listening and I'm taking that to then do some coaching or some decision making maybe outside of that room. And maybe I've said, you know, a sentence or two in the room, but I'm not going to say something just to say something. I'm there for a very specific reason, and I don't need to talk just as much as everybody else in the room. And I've heard from some other executives in other organizations that sometimes the HR folks feel like they have to contribute something to prove that they're supposed to be there. And I think we all bring something very different to the table. And some conversations people have more to contribute and some conversations people will just be listening, but it's still very valuable to have all those people around the table.
That's really interesting. It's more than just why HR needs to be more than HR, but it's also why and how HR needs to understand how to communicate HR at the right time, at the right place, to make sure that it doesn't seem like you're trying to overcompensate for this lack of feeling. Wow.
Exactly.
That's interesting. I never really thought about that.
Yeah. It was something that I had never really thought of before. Cause again, I'm usually that person in the room, so I don't have that self-awareness or I haven't seen other people in those situations. But yeah, over the last 6 months or so, I've actually had a couple people, you know, kind of talking about these sort of topics. A couple people in other organizations have mentioned that about their HR folks. So I thought that was really interesting and something I had never thought of before.
Got it. Yeah, that is pretty interesting. So then moving forward, now that we've understood or we've really defined what this looks like and not necessarily what you're missing, but what you could be doing differently, what does this look like in practice? If I want it to be more than just HR, what am I doing? We like to provide a framework for our audience so that this podcast can always be actionable and they can go back and actually do something. So what does that look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So I mentioned the manager training example before, but I think another example is this. So we try to do biannual development feedback, and that's what we call performance reviews here. And we tend to then, that means we do one in, you know, July, August, kind of that time frame. And so we, based on our fiscal calendar, that usually falls at the end of a quarter leading into the beginning of another quarter. And when I looked out over the organization, we do quarterly OKRs. We all have very clear KPIs that we're aiming towards. So hopefully people feel like they're getting a lot of ongoing feedback, but it's still really important that we have these more focused conversations twice a year. But when I was looking at the various timelines, I realized, well, sales is trying to close a quarter. Finance then needs to close the books on the quarter that just closed. Client services then has their QBRs at the beginning of the quarter. And by the way, the tech and product teams have sprints that are running during all that time. And so I was having a hard time kind of finding a timeline that worked for everybody. And so I took a step back and I said, look, at the end of the day, the point of these conversations is to touch base on the development feedback we had earlier in the year and to make sure those conversations are continuing. It doesn't actually matter the timeline. And so I reached out to the leadership team and I said, we're sort of in the middle of our year. This is normally when we do development feedback. I don't want to put a timeline in place this time because the timeline might not be right for your teams, no matter what timeline I choose. So I trust you guys and I'll partner with you guys to find the time that works well for your team over the next 2 months or so versus everyone at Order Groove is doing it this exact same time. And I think that I have seen in other organizations or, you know, talking with other peers where that would have been very uncomfortable for an HR person because maybe it would have been gotten slipped or, you know, one team got it sooner than another team and that's not fair. But at the end of the day, if I wanted these conversations to be meaningful, it had to be at the time that worked best for the team. So that's, to me, that's another example of, you know, find what is the purpose of what you're trying to do. Sure, it's an HR thing, but if you're going to go beyond being just that HR person to check the box, you have to do what's right for the organization. And for that moment, it was being more flexible on the timing of how we were handling it.
And one of the things we also like to do is make sure that when the guest is using some type of acronym or explaining something that everyone may not know about, we like to define that. So
yes,
OKRs. What are they? I know what they are, but yes. A lot of people are throwing around OKRs. A lot of people buy OKR management software. So can you define that for the audience and then also talk about how that comes into your world as an HR person? Because I think that's it totally relates to the conversation we're having now.
Absolutely. Yes. So OKRs are objectives and key results. It is a sort of the latest, the newest, whatever way of doing some goal setting. And the purpose of OKRs is to really focus and to make sure that you are stretching yourself enough that you're not just doing softball things and really moving the business forward and getting outside your comfort zone to stretch, but also not trying to, you know, shoot for the moon and there's no way you can do something. And the goal is to learn and adjust as you go. So it's very agile in the sense of, you know, it's probably came from out of Silicon Valley and really meant to this is what we're trying to get accomplished. This is what we think we need to do. How do we learn and adjust as we go? So we do it on a quarterly basis. In theory, you should only have, you know, maybe two objectives that you're trying to hit as a company. And then you've got a couple of key results that will be leading indicators that you're going to hit that objective. So one could be, you know, that the objective is to reduce our time to hire. And so one key result of that could be that we have increased our top of the funnel by X percent. Or another, you know, KR could be that we've had, you know, X candidates, you know, get to a certain phase or whatever the different KRs could be. So that's the sort of design of OKRs. And then you rate yourself on a confidence level throughout the quarter or whatever the time frame is on a scale of 1 to 10. And you're only meant to hit 7. Like 7 is good, which is very uncomfortable for folks because everybody wants to get a 10, which is an A+ and a gold star and all the, you know, the green light and all that stuff. But you're actually only supposed to hit a 7. And so that means that if you actually achieve 10s every time around, you're potentially making the goals too easy. But if you're only hitting 4s every time around, it may be too lofty and maybe you need to reassess what the actual goal or objective or key result should be. They are not meant to be performance-based. So in other words, you shouldn't put someone, you know, you shouldn't ding them for performance if they don't hit their OKR, or you shouldn't have comp or bonuses tied to it. And the reason for that is it's supposed to be a stretch and you're supposed to be comfortable, you know, learning as you go. If you've missed it, that's okay. What are you going to do differently next time? And if you're tying comp and performance to that, sometimes that's obviously, those two don't always align. Now, it doesn't mean that if someone doesn't hit their OKRs quarter over quarter over quarter, and it's because they're sitting on their butt not doing anything, clearly you can performance manage that, but not if it's less about if they've hit the actual objective, and it's more about the process and the focus, the prioritization, and the learning that comes from doing the exercise.
Wow, that was awesome. And I just learned some things there too. I just realized that we're going to have to do another episode on OKRs in HR. We might have to bring you back for that.
It's really interesting. I had never been exposed to them. And when we hired a new head of product 2 years ago, he brought the concept on board, and our COO loved it. I mean, we all loved it, but she was really excited about it. So it's been a real learning for all of us. And again, especially being overachievers, even hitting a 6 or a 7, I'm like, oh, but it's not the 10 that I wanted. It's like, no, you're not supposed to. It's okay. What did you learn?
And so the last part that we want to talk about is, now that I've taken your advice and I say, all right, Karen, this is great. I understand this, the feedback, the OKRs, I'm doing all these things to be more than just HR. I'm sitting in the room and I'm not talking just for the sake of talking, but I'm actually adding value. If I don't have any value to add, then I'm not bringing anything up. How do I know if this is working? How do I know if all the time and effort and energy that I put into this is actually driving the business forward and making me a better HR leader? How do I measure that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think it's something that it's really interesting, you know, talking about the evolution of HR. I still think that the ROI or the data measurement piece for HR is still sometimes difficult. You know, you look at turnover numbers and that's gone down, and that's great, but there's also sometimes healthy turnover and you want to make sure you're not missing that piece. So the things that I look for when I'm thinking about, am I thinking something the right way? Is it having the impact that I hoped it would have? Is if it's something very specific, like a culture survey score, that we were trying to move the needle on that, then that's definitely something that I use. So, you know, one example that we had was as we grew very quickly in 2017, we felt like we were told flat out in an engagement survey, culture survey, that there was more and more of a gap between leadership and the team, and that we had to do something to help lessen that gap. And so we tried a couple of things to move the needle. They actually didn't really work. So we're trying something else, and that seems to be working much better. But I was really going back to that culture survey, and I would ask just a couple of those questions on a more regular basis to do a pulse check to see if the thing I was doing was really making a difference. So that was one very specific place where I was trying to make a difference, and I was able to use a quantitative piece of data around if I was improving, because I would do those pulse checks. Otherwise, to be completely honest, I am very transparent when I am working on something, whether that's a bigger program like a recognition program, whether that is trying a new form of communication, whether when we launched Slack or when we changed what our team update structure looked like. And I was very honest with the team when I rolled it out. I said, we're going to try this. And this is why we're trying it, because this is what I heard and this is what I think might work. And this is what I think it's going to have as an impact. But tell me if I'm wrong. And if I'm wrong, we'll try it again, or we'll take half of what we did and change the other half. And so that live feedback, that qualitative feedback of, you know, how is it working, really goes a long way. And I do that when I'm coaching individuals, individual leaders around, if we do a 360, how did the 360 feel for you? Did it work? What didn't work? If we are working on rolling out new values or whatever the thing is, I try to be very open about, we're trying this and I want your feedback. And I think that transparency and that vulnerability will give me the best KPIs that I could ever get, because I'm going to get the direct feedback on if it was successful.
Last question of this section, which I didn't even have written down before, but selfishly I want to know, because you're just so forward thinking when it comes to HR. How big of a gap do you think we have in HR right now in regards to old legacy HR to the most forward thinking? Because it seems like we have the biggest gap that's ever existed in HR today. And so I liken it to people driving cars today still from the 1970s, and then us also trying to put self-driving autonomous vehicles on the road at the same time, and then every car in between.
That's a great metaphor, by the way. It's really interesting. I was actually having a conversation a couple weeks ago with some folks that work with a more conservative, really big company, and they are actually trying to bring more forward-thinking HR things into that organization. And so they talk to a lot of, you know, kind of startup-y HR folks to kind of hear what some of the newer things that they're doing. And it was a really interesting conversation because I think that I agree that that gap really does exist. And I think part of it is the same reason gaps exist everywhere. It's the same reason why, you know, I love them to death and they are very open-minded about so many things, but my in-laws are very nervous about technology. And the minute we try to, you know, do something technology with them, it's very overwhelming. And I think that is anytime you're trying to do something new, you think you have to rip the band-aid and change everything that you do and that it's going to be this whole new thing. Like you said, I'm driving a stick shift with zero power steering, and now you're going to put me in a driverless car. There's so much in between that we can be doing that I think if we just talk about what are some of the different ways people approach HR, what are some of the different ways that organizations have grown through their people and culture initiatives. And those can be the littlest things, and just start with that. Because, you know, the other thing is going back to the very beginning of what we were talking about, and the whole point of this conversation is you should be doing what's right for your organization. And so if you're in a more conservative, big organization, then do what's right for them. And maybe a lot of processes are right for them. And that's totally fine. And honestly, someone like myself could probably learn from something like that, because maybe, you know, I could put some more infrastructure in place. But I think it's not one or the other. It's figuring out what's right for your group and then being open to hearing some small things that you can do. And it doesn't mean that everything you've done so far is wrong. It doesn't mean that everything you've done hasn't been valuable. It's just, what are some different things that we can be thinking about? Because no matter what, your organization has a lot of different kinds of people in it. And you may only be speaking to some of those people with that philosophy. So how can you be better approaching the full organization based on what's right for your culture?
Thanks for dropping all that wisdom. That was awesome. So now we're going to go to my favorite section of the podcast, which I like to call the real, the random, and ridiculous, where I ask you a real, random, and ridiculous question. Are you ready?
Okay. I'm ready. I love it.
Okay. Real question. Do you like bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made?
I shy away from bread pudding. I don't know if this is fair, because to be honest, I'm not sure how often I've actually had it, but my impression of it is that it's really mushy and I don't like mushy stuff. Like, I don't like oatmeal. I don't like anything mushy. So I rarely eat it. So I'm going to say I don't like it, but that may not be fair.
I'm going to have to change your perception of bread pudding. When I first put my wife onto bread pudding, she had the same thing. She's all about texture and temperature with her food, super picky. And she says, no, I don't like bread pudding. It's so squishy. And then I start introducing her to the world of gourmet bread pudding and the amazingness of all the different flavors and variety of bread pudding. She fell in love with it. And so now we eat it all the time.
Wow.
So next time I'm in New York, we're definitely having a bread pudding date.
Sounds perfect. Right. Clearly, I am being judgmental, so I need to open my mind to this.
You have to open your mind. You're in HR. Okay, random question. We met at a Disrupt HR event in New York, which was awesome.
Yes.
And it seems like you go to, I'm going to say you probably go to a fair share of HR events. So I know Disrupt HR is trying to be the different, very cool, hip HR event, because the perception of a lot of HR events is that they're dry. And so what is the biggest problem that you find with most HR events?
Yeah, and you actually mentioned it earlier, and I love that that's sort of the point of how you lead your podcast, is that they have to be action-oriented. If I go to one more thing that says, you know, the performance review is dead, and this is all the philosophy behind it, period, end of conversation, I'm going to jump off the bridge. I want to hear, and why I go to, you know, things like Disrupt HR, or I listen to a podcast like this, is that I want to hear what companies are actually doing. The best panels, workshops, whatever, are actual HR folks that are, you know, working in the field, consulting with companies or internal, even if they then like bring some of their, you know, business leaders with them and talk about what they've actually done in their organization, what they were trying to do, what they did, what they learned, what went wrong, what they do different next time. Because that's what's going to make us all better HR people, which I think is the point of going to those events.
Nice. And then the ridiculous question. You mentioned that you were working in the entertainment space.
Yes.
I'm sure a lot of ridiculous things happened there.
Yes.
Without naming any names, protecting the innocent, what's one of the most ridiculous things that you saw while working in the entertainment space?
Yes. So one of my very favorite stories, and I'll do a ridiculous, like funny one versus like diva thing, is because I have plenty of those too. And actually I can share the name because it's a really, we all talk about the story very in a very endearing way. So 1997, I was stage managing at a theater north of Boston. And one of the shows was actually sort of a review or whatever with Cheetah Rivera and Carol Channing, who just passed away this week. That's why it's top of mind for me. And so they would come and they do this like show and they do a couple songs together and they do their own sets. And so we had like a company barbecue or something during that show, and we had these lobsters, and Miss Channing came out and she was in between shows, so she was just kind of wearing overalls or whatever, and we were having these lobsters and everybody was kind of picking at them or whatever, and she says something to the effect of like, you guys are doing this way too delicately. She literally takes off her shoe and just bangs the you know what out of the lobster. The whole claw breaks and she's just eating the meat right from it. And here's this like huge Broadway legend. I mean, at that point she was in her 70s or whatever. And it was just the best moment ever. And we, all of us were talking about it on Facebook this week after we heard that that she passed, because we all remember that story. And it was just a great moment. And so it was something that stands out that was very funny versus like, roll your eyes, what's wrong with these people kind of stories.
Nice. Well, thanks for sharing that story. I'm sure our audience loved it too.
My pleasure.
So with that being said, Karen, you have been an awesome, awesome Employee Cycle podcast guest. Thank you so much. Woo! Let's
give it up. Thank you.
Oh, this was great, and this was really fun. So, can you please tell us where we can find you and Order Groove online?
Yes. So, Order Groove is ordergroove.com. We have a careers page as well, so check that out if you want to learn more about the culture, as well as any open roles here, mainly in New York, but we also have a role open in Austin. And then for myself, I'm still building sort of like my broader social presence, but obviously I have a LinkedIn page. It's Karen D. Weeks on LinkedIn, and I share either things that are going on, like doing this podcast, or things that are going on in Order Groove, or interesting articles that I find. And, you know, I love hearing from folks and sort of sharing my story. So if anyone has any, you know, question follow-ups to this, or they want to connect on LinkedIn, you know, definitely reach out, and I'm happy to share any of my stories.
Thanks again, Karen. And for all the information that you just provided, we'll be putting that into the podcast notes as well. So all you listeners out there, if this is your first time listening and you enjoyed this episode, then please make sure you download the Employee Cycle Podcast on your podcast player, wherever you're listening. And for everyone who enjoyed this podcast, please go on iTunes, give a like, leave a comment, tell us how much you loved it, or if you didn't like it. Nah, if you didn't like it, don't leave. Yeah, we don't want to see any bad comments. If you didn't like it, you don't need to leave anything. But for all you HR leaders out there who have been listening to this and have been enjoying it, please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks again for listening. Later, kids.